said, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number as Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We are joined by my good friend Max Richmond. He's the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And before we went to break, Max, you wanted to respond to what Sandy had to say.
Well, yeah, let me just elaborate a little bit on that question. So I was asking Max, how is it that because the money collected for Social Security under the FICA tax wasn't collected in a fund and put aside, but was rather has always been used for current purposes, so we end up today with the need to increase taxes to support Social Security to those who have paid into Social Security in the past substantial sums of money, and it seems to me that the Republicans or the conservatives who want to have lower taxes and worry about so-called entitlements have been setting the stage for this conflict by reducing taxes and setting the stage for the time when there will have to be an increase in taxes to support Social Security and Medicare, and they can pit the taxpayer against the beneficiaries of those two social programs. So I wondered, what's the strategy going forward?
Right. Well, Sandy, there's a lot to unpack there, but let me just first try to clarify a little bit the way the program is financed. There is a payroll tax, a dedicated revenue stream used to pay Social Security benefits. Back in the last time the Congress addressed Social Security in any comprehensive way in the early 80s, there were some changes made to the program. The payroll tax was increased a little bit. The age for receiving benefits was, over a long period of time, increased from 65 to 67. All that was done to build up the Social Security Trust Fund. Money that's paid into the program in excess of what is needed to pay benefits, it's not accurate that it's used for other purposes. The way it works, that money is invested in treasury bills held by the Social Security program. These are not, as some have characterized them, little slips, IOUs. You know, they're not little slips of paper, as much as I regard Earl. They're not little slips of papers with Earl Ingram on them. They're treasury bills. So that's what the program has. And those are rolled over almost every day and redeemed, earn interest, not the best interest available, but the soundest investment, because they are in treasury bills. So to give you one example, during the pandemic, because of the unemployment we were experiencing, less money came into the program for a couple of years than was needed to pay everybody their full benefits. But everybody did get their full benefits because the bonds didn't even have to be redeemed. The interest on the bonds was enough to make up the shortfall for the money that was coming into the program through the payroll tax. And the size of the trust fund actually grew, even though we were experiencing economic dislocation.
So what is the size of that trust fund?
Pardon me?
What is the size of that trust fund? How many?
$2.9 trillion.
Okay.
You put your finger on what the real issue is, and that is how do we keep the program sound for a long period of time? Right now, the trustees, they report every spring, the program is able to pay everybody their full benefits. This is not according to Max Richmond, it's the trustees of Social Security, until 2035. It was extended by 1 year from the previous year's report. Now, in 2035, we're going to have a problem, a serious problem, because the program, the money that comes in, the trust fund, all those, that $2.9 trillion will be used. There will only be enough money coming in to pay about 77% of the benefits that people are due. This does not mean the program is bankrupt. There's no money there. It was stolen. All of that baloney. It just means there's a shortfall and a serious shortfall. What can we do about it? We can bring more revenue into the program in a fair way. As I've talked to Earl about before, there's a cap on wages subject to the payroll tax. It changes a little bit every year. This year, it's $147,000 in wages. After that, no more payroll tax. Why? We would support eliminating that cap. President Biden has pledged not to raise taxes on anybody earning less than $400,000 a year. So the plan we support would keep the cap on taxes on wages subject to payroll tax at what it is, 147. It changes a little bit every year. Start collecting payroll tax on wages at $400,000 and above. This would impact a tiny, tiny sliver of wage earners who could afford to pay, in my opinion, a little bit more to make sure the program is sound way beyond 2035. So that's the plan. There's a bill that we support introduced in the House by Congressman John Larson of Connecticut. He's the chairman of the Social Security Subcommittee of the Ways and Means Committee. He has 203 co-sponsors. I think I'm going to actually see him tonight, I believe, and the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and we're hoping to get that bill out of the committee and pass the House right after Labor Day. So that, in my mind, is a fair way to keep the program sound beyond 2035. We have to do something, because I think even Ron Johnson, even Senator Johnson would, I think, say we cannot cut Social Security benefits in 12 years by 22%. That's not acceptable. So I think the fair way to extend the solvency of the program is to bring a little more revenue into it in a fair and responsible way, and I think the plan I've talked about does that.
Sandy?
No, that answers my question, and I think it clarifies a point with respect to how the Social Security funds are currently sequestered. I do believe that somehow the government is able to access it for the purpose of solving its own cash borrowing requirements, but that's beyond, I guess, that's
well,
beyond this
by
conversation.
Well, by its nature, but I think the way that's characterized can be misleading. We've heard for years there's no money there, the government was stolen, the money was stolen, the government's using it for other purposes. Yes, we don't have, you remember when George Bush was working on privatizing the program, he had a prop, he went to some vault in West Virginia and opened it, and there was it wasn't $2.9 trillion, it was about half that at the time. There was no money in there. It would not make sense. And I think everybody understands this, to have $2.9 trillion in cash
right
sitting somewhere. You invest it. You invest it in the soundest investment possible, treasury bills. You don't earn the best interest possible, but it's the safest investment. And if you look at it that way, that money is used when the bonds are issued, the cash is used
for the government,
or whatever the government needs government.
Yeah.
But it's not stolen. It is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government.
Yeah,
and that is through U.S. Treasury bills.
Yeah, I mean, what I said earlier was an economist's oversimplification of it, and it does have that interest aspect to it, which is a bit like a COLA adjustment. But so the cash flow does go to the benefit of the government during the period of excess FICA payments. But
right, and it's repaid. And it's repaid.
Yes, and it's repaid.
Yep.
So yes, I do understand. I think I understood it in a foggy fashion. But thank you for the clarification.
Well, thank you for the question, because it allowed me to elaborate on, you know, some of the common misunderstandings about the program.
You know, Max. Clearly, Ron Johnson, this is not going anywhere, right? I mean, it's not going anywhere.
I hope not.
You used it. You threw in hope.
Yeah, I hope not. And, you know, we'll see if Ron Johnson's a U.S. Senator next January.
Well, I don't think he's going to be. I personally don't think he's going to be. I know it's not going to be an easy fight, but the guy who he's running against, there are people in this state, both Democrat and Republican, who have basically had enough of Ron Johnson. He's done some things that warrant him being removed from the Senate, and hopefully that's going to happen.
Well, I've met your Lieutenant Governor
Mandela Barnes.
Mandela Barnes. I met him in Wisconsin a couple years ago. We were doing some forums on prescription drug costs with AARP, and he came. I had not heard of him, but he made a presentation, and he was terrific. I mean, just
yeah, he is. Max, we got to run. Thank you as always for keeping us informed.
Thank you, Earl.
All right, we'll
you
talk
take
soon.
Care.
All right, that's Max Richmond.
Bye bye.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Dave from Mequon, hang on or call back after the break. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be back.